Welcome to Hype, episode 71. 71. Sometimes you just have to stop and think, that's amazing that we've made it this far. My name is Selena, and this week I'm joined by regular host Pam and special guest for the second time, Kristen. Yay!
Hi.
I love how, like I said last week, oh, we have to have Kristen back on, and then boom, it happens like magic.
the listeners like loved her. I mean, we love Kristen, yes. But they like especially love her.
Yes. So.
And it's really nice to be loved. So thanks, guys.
Aw, how wonderful. What a wonderful way to start the show. And I also just realized that obviously it's a shame Kyle isn't here. It's also a shame Merrim isn't here, but it's especially a shame Kyle isn't here, first of all, because he's missed so many episodes, and also it would be like a Vampire Hype reunion.
Oh my god, really it would.
Like, it already is, but even more so. That's pretty incredible. So welcome to Vampire Hype, everybody.
Yeah, really.
Let's talk vampires. I actually, I can say now that I'm bringing an interview with Juliet Landau later today, because this is like Monday night we're recording. Hello, Selena here, interrupting myself. I just want to quickly tell you guys that we're actually going to throw in a little clip from the interview with Juliet Landau at the end of the podcast, so after the credits have rolled. This is, I think, a particularly good clip from the interview. The full interview, of course, is on hypeable.com, where Juliet talks about how different vampire creators, including Joss Whedon and Anne Rice, have drawn upon metaphors for real life when sort of talking about vampirism and portraying vampires on screen. So it's very, very cool. You can skip to the end and listen to it now, or you can listen to the whole thing and come, you know, let it happen naturally. And again, that interview is on hypeable.com if you're interested in checking out the whole thing. So before we get into the show, just want to remind you as always about the contact information, because we have many, many, many ways that you can get in contact with us about things we talk about on the show, or if you have any feedback or suggestions for us. First of all, you can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. You go to the left-hand corner and you click the little plus, and you find, you know, the podcast links and everything there. You can also find us on Twitter at hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram at Hypeable Hype, and you can email us at hype, that's H-Y-P-E, at hypeable, which is hypable.com. That was part of it. So hype at hypeable.com. So please take one of those ways to contact us, and we can put your feedback into the show. Okay, so before we get to how we hype, actually, we were just talking about this before the show, and I really want to bring this up at the beginning so everyone knows that there's something really cool to look forward to. Kristen is on a number of other podcasts for Hypeable, and one of them is called Rewatchable. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Rewatchable is a lot of fun. They basically, I'm not on it at the moment, but I will more than likely be joining it again very soon. We started off, we did like some Firefly episodes, which if you go back on iTunes and to the past episodes of Rewatchable, you can find them. They've done a whole bunch of shows, but right now they've got about a month and a half left, I think, of Avatar, The Last Airbender. They're just finishing that up, and they're going to be starting another show soon, so keep your eyes peeled, because I'm pretty sure you're not going to want to miss it. It's going to be fantastic. I'm not allowed to say anything, or my roommate will kill me. So keep looking out, because it's going to be a real lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it. So,
mm-hmm. And by the way, her roommate is Karen, who's also on Hypeable, so it's not like some crazy person. Wanted to say.
Some Hypeable fangirl that's like, I tell the secrets before I tell the secrets.
And if you listen to Onceable or Book Hype or Rewatchable, you will be very, very familiar with Karen. So,
yes, absolutely. She's been on this show too. She's everywhere. Very exciting.
She wants to be back. She told me to make sure you tell you that. She was like, okay. Kristen, make sure you tell Selena I want to come back on Hype.
Awesome. Well, she will be back. I can almost promise that, because especially since it's been so hard to schedule all of us at once. It's been pretty tough.
Life gets in the way sometimes. And also we have the beauty of daylight savings time, which can't just switch on the same day for everybody.
I know.
We still love you guys. We're just doing our best.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So this week, before we get into the news, there's been a lot of exciting news about Cursed Child and Gilmore Girls and Marvel and Warm Bodies. But before we get into that, we just want to talk about what we've been doing in fandom for the past week, or what we'll be doing in the upcoming weeks. Now, Kristen, I see we both have movies, so I'm going to start with you.
Sure. Karen and I went and had a double feature where she saw The Martian, which I talked about last time I was on here, which was amazing.
We talk about that every week.
I know. Love that. Everyone loves it, but it's so good. But we also saw Steve Jobs, which I am an Aaron Sorkin fangirl for life. I love him and all of his movies and TV shows. Like, I'm obsessed. So I was really, really excited to see this. I've loved his screenplays in the past. And he did a really great job with this. And Fassbender was fabulous. And Kate Winslet just stole the show for me. And it was really great. I really liked it.
It's interesting you say that, because it's gotten kind of mixed reviews.
I know. And more than anything, the reviews have seemed to say that Fassbender is just amazing, and you know, the movie has its faults, but you know, the writing is great, and people are very protective of Steve Jobs. And so I know that the content of the book that Sorkin used to adapt the screenplay, there were a lot of people upset with what he was going to use and how he was going to show it. But ultimately, I think it was fair. It was pretty fair. Like, it wasn't all wine and roses. Like, he did show some of the more pesky aspects of Jobs' personality, but I think he was fair about how he did it. And in the end, it wasn't like he butchered his character. Like, he wasn't trying to, you know, to be unfair to Steve Jobs and his family, because you want to honor the man who brought us all of this technology and, you know, all of these advancements. And I think he did. Like, it's definitely not, again, it's not all happy-go-lucky, you know, Steve Jobs is the best man we've ever met kind of thing. But I thought it was a really, really good movie. I think Karen liked it too, so.
Oh, good.
I saw that as well, actually. And I, to be fair, I saw it very late at night. So to me, it started off a little slower than I would have liked at like a later showing. But that's my fault as well. But I really enjoyed the cinematography aspect. Just some of the ways that they played with the flashbacks specifically were really, really cool. So if you've seen that, Kristen has, you'll know what I'm talking about. But I also saw about a year ago, I guess, when the what was it, the Ashton Kutcher biopic came out for Jobs, for Steve Jobs. The thing I didn't like about that was that it was really good as if you're talking superhero terms, an origin story. Like, it was great for an origin story, but it didn't really go into some of the, I guess, technology that we grew up with as millennials. So what I really enjoyed about Sorkin's Steve Jobs is that he kind of went into the iMac and stuff like that, because that is I guess, just for me as somebody that grew up when that was coming out, it just was it gave me goosebumps, because everybody kind of remembers where they were the first time they saw a computer that looked that cool. So that was just really fun. I really liked that he did that.
Cool. I haven't seen it yet. It was actually the closing movie of BFI, which I attended a couple of weeks ago. And if I had enough money to stick around, you know, I saw some of the people I met there go to the red carpet and interview Cate Blanchett. And I was like, ah, so close. But a movie I did see at the BFI, though, was Suffragette, which I've kind of talked about already, but I'm going to take this week to make it my How We Hype. I really urge everyone to go see this movie. I think there's been a lot of sort of mixed reviews of it, and especially one thing that's come up a lot has been that it stars Carey Mulligan, and Meryl Streep has a tiny role. Anne-Marie Duff is fantastic. Ben Whishaw is in it, so you guys will be happy. But people have said, because it tackles the women's rights movement of the early 1900s, and it's about this militant group of women that use a lot of force to sort of get their message across. And people are saying, well, you know, they don't really take into account all the women that were, you know, not violent and that were protesting. And that's true, but that's also not what the movie is about. So it would be, it's kind of like, I made this analogy in my review, which you can read on Hypable, which is if you were making a movie about the men that go to war, you wouldn't be spending a lot of time with the men that don't go to war, or you wouldn't be spending a lot of time with the people at the war who don't do the fighting. You know what I mean? Like, who sort of, there's different ways of telling a story. And what I loved about Suffragette is that I think it tells a very strong, very bold story, and it doesn't hold back, and it's sort of saying, it's very message of the movie. And I kind of feel like this is why some people don't like it, is because it's like not apologetic at all about what it is, and it's not holding any bars. It's just saying, you know what, these women were violent, and sometimes they did bad things, and sometimes they did good things, and sometimes life really sucked for them, and this is the movie that we're, this is the story that we're telling. We're not telling another story. And I just loved it. I think it's fantastic. And I've got a bunch of interviews up on Hypable. I interviewed the composer, Alexandre Desplat, and I interviewed the director, Sarah Gavron, and just a bunch of people. You can find that on Hypable somewhere. I don't know if either of you guys have seen it.
I haven't.
It's actually, it's not out here.
It's not out here? Mm-hmm. I don't understand this, because it's mm-hmm. like, I've been trying to work out these schedules. Yeah. And okay, tell me, sorry.
But I was going to say, I do have I'm going to a screener of it on Wednesday.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, but it's not out till I think the end of the week.
Okay, then I guess that's kind of perfect.
That's when our embargo would be lifted if we went. But
Is that a wide release or is it limited?
I'm not sure. The nice thing about living near San Francisco is that San Francisco is very artsy, so we usually get a lot of that stuff a lot sooner than some of the other parts of the country. So that is a good question.
Well, I guess
in the press release, it just said to hold all interviews until the release date on October 30th. So
I guess you guys will have to keep me informed about this stuff, because all I have is IMDb. Which is like, it came out on the 23rd. So I'm like, oh, perfect. Luckily, our interviews are not embargoed. So listeners who cannot wait for the embargo to lift in American can just go over to Hypable, because our embargo lifted with BFI. So that's kind of cool. A special thing. Okay, well, that was still my review. I hope that you guys go and check it out when it comes out, and share your thoughts on it, even if you don't like it, which not everyone probably will, but I really did. So moving into did you have anything else, Pam? You don't have anything in the doc?
I don't. I've actually been in the process of moving and painting and all that stuff that comes with moving house. So I've been listening to a lot of music.
Nice.
Lately, including a track that we're going to talk about later on this show. But for the sake of just contributing to the conversation, I'm really, really into the new Justin Bieber song, Sorry. I think it's really catchy, and I don't even care if you judge me, because it's great.
Sorry, not sorry.
Kate Walsh, too. Exactly. Sorry, not sorry. I'm like a little in love with Sorry. Yeah, so I think I'll just go with that. I really like that. I'm really interested to see where he goes with this next album, which is coming out next month. So it's definitely one that I am waiting on.
Exciting. But we'll get back to music later in the news. The first story, though, is, huge news broke earlier this week or last week about Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, the stage adaptation of a new Harry Potter story. And this is so much fun, because for years we've been like ragging on the news that have been like, a new Harry Potter story is coming, the 8th Harry Potter story is coming. And now it's actually true, because Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is officially labeled an 8th Harry Potter story. And I just thought it was absolutely hysterical, because J.K. Rowling, the master of subterfuge, you know, she's been telling us it's not a prequel, it's not a prequel, it's not a prequel. Somehow we all thought it also wasn't a sequel. And I don't know how that happened, but I distinctly remember going, if it's not a prequel and if it's not a sequel, then what is it? But I don't know why we didn't Like,
if you know what? Because she was so naysaying about the whole thing. You know, she was always like, I'm never going to write an eighth book. Never say never, but it's like probably not going to happen. So don't hold your breath. So none of us held our breath. And we didn't expect this.
Yeah, exactly. Right. She's like, I'm not writing an eighth book. And she kept saying, not a prequel, not a prequel. So we all just assumed we heard not a sequel in there, even though she never said it.
We took it. We didn't take it. Like, we took it too literally. Yes. We took it as just like, I'm not writing an eighth anything. But she said, book.
Uh-huh.
She never said
but
place.
This is what makes J.K. Rowling such a good storyteller, like this very sure. thing.
Technicality.
Yes.
Queen
yes.
technicalities.
This is like the Half-Blood Prince all over again. Or like the Sirius Black thing. It's amazing. So on this story, I mean, this has like 50,000 Facebook likes on Twitter. It's really ridiculous Facebook likes on Twitter? Guys, it's super early for me. I'm sorry. So yeah, I mean, it's just been completely tearing up the fandom. I'm looking for the official synopsis here, which is just like sends chills down your spine because it's like, it's actually a Harry Potter story. It goes, it was always difficult being Harry Potter, and it isn't much easier now that he is an overworked employee of the Ministry of Magic, a husband and a father of three school-aged children. While Harry grapples with a past that refuses to stay where it belongs, his youngest son Albus must struggle with the weight of a family legacy he never wanted. As past and present fuse ominously, both father and son learn the uncomfortable truth. Sometimes darkness comes from unexpected places. What is it? What is this darkness? What is this family legacy? It's so exciting. I think I can safely say here that the entire Hyperbole staff is currently trying to work out how the hell we're all going to get to London and watch this at the same time, because it's obviously only in London. And I guess that's another thing to kind of say about this news. Andrew wrote up a brilliant article on Hyperbole about how J.K. Rowling could make this play available to a larger audience, because obviously what people are saying is, if she's actually making an eighth Harry Potter story, shouldn't we all be able to watch it? You know, because it's so close off. What do you guys think about all of this news?
Well, I mean, it's exciting. I mean, clearly, who wants it? Like, raise your hand if you want more Harry Potter. Yeah, I know. But it's like, I think it's a really cool idea to expand the world from that we know from the books and we've seen in the movies. Like, to put that on stage is a really, really cool idea. But the one drawback about being on stage is that, A, it's not the same to broadcast the stage play to theaters or on the internet for the entire world to see. Like, it's a totally different atmosphere to sit in the theater and feel the tension and all of that on stage. But it's also an amazing idea to put this property on stage. Like, I want to see how J.K. Rowling, the playwright, works here. You know, like, it's a totally different animal to write a play rather than write a novel. So I'm really, you know, I'm excited to see how it does. I don't know if I will be able to get to London to see it. But I'm hoping that somehow, some way, there will be a version of it for the rest of the world to read or see, or I don't know. But, you know, it's definitely interesting. I like that she's not just ready to say goodbye, like the rest of us aren't ready either.
I just hate that it's not accessible to everybody, because the beauty of Harry Potter is that we've all been able to enjoy it from our different parts of the world, and then we can all come together and bond over a shared love of something that's so magical and beautiful. And so to have this only, as of right now, be showing in London, you know, on a stage, it just completely ostracizes a large group of the fan base. And again, this is talking to somebody who will probably not be able to go out to see it. So I'm a little bit more bitter, but I am kind of hoping that somehow they'll be able to figure out how to, you know, share it with the world, because it's not going to be the same as, like, I don't want to read a recap of this. I'd rather just pretend like it didn't exist. Mm-hmm. If that was the case, like, I want something.
Yeah,
if this is really going to stand as the continuation of her story. Like, I don't know if, like, you know, people do like those, like, adapted, like, this book has been adapted by the movie, all the, you know, books all the time. So I don't know if somebody would be able to do that for this, but it's just a shame that it probably won't be Joe because I feel like she has so much on her plate. But then again, like maybe it will. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to be excited about this for what it is because, you know, you know me, like I'm not really into the movies. I'm not really into the extra stuff. I just really love the books and having Harry's story continued when he's an adult and he's not the person at Hogwarts is really, it's really hard for me and for a lot of people. And also just having it as a stage production because you can't separate your thoughts about the characters from the actors who are playing them. You can't separate the story from the experience of watching it on stage, you know, which is great if you like stage shows, and I do, but it's not Harry Potter for me. It's really hard to mess those up. But trying to be optimistic, I guess.
But I do like that it's focusing on the idea that, you know, his children, in a sense, and especially Albus Severus, who looks like him, have to live in his shadow. Like, that's something I've always wondered as a fan, especially in, like in the epilogue, they kind of, like, ask, like, doesn't one of them ask, like, oh, what are they staring at while they're on the train? So I've always kind of, like, wondered if some of his kids maybe took the spotlight harder than others or the idea of having to live up to not just like Harry's legacy, but like also a Ginny's legacy, Hermione and Ron's they're just like a power group. So of course these kids are expected to be great, but it's probably not an easy life.
Right. Okay.
I mean, first world problems over here, but you know.
Oh, it's just so hard being the child of Harry Potter. But yeah, I guess we'll have to talk more about this in the future weeks because we do have to move on because the show's already super long, guys. What happened? But yeah, I mean, let us know what you think about this cursed child thing. Let us know if you're planning to go see it or if you can't go see it and you're very upset about that. Email us hype@hypeable.com, tweet us @hypeablehype, and let us know what you think. And for the next story, we'll all get to see this one.
We're going to keep on the themes of sequels because we have some more Gilmore Girls news for you. You guys, I'm still so excited about this. I'm so sad that Merrima's not here, but I know that Kristen is a big Gilmore Girls fan, so she'll be excited to talk about this with me. So we finally have a little bit more detail as to what this next Netflix revival is going to entail. So we knew last week that we were going to get 4 90-minute mini movie type episodes coming to Netflix soon. And we also knew that Amy Sherman-Palladino, who was the original showrunner, was going to come back and produce and write these next 4 installments of the show. What we didn't know was like what it was going to entail. And now we kind of know a little bit about how these are going to be structured. So according to a report that first showed up on TVLine.com, we know that each of the episodes will represent a different season. So you're going to get winter, spring, summer, and fall, which is kind of interesting and also kind of nice.
That's like The Last of Us.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's random.
I was going to say, if you set it back in Stars Hollow, you know, like everybody that's a Gilmore Girls fan knows that like Lorelai has this thing about winter and the first snow and stuff like that. And it's like a little bit that plays through all the seasons of the series. So it's going to be nice to see those characters in the course of a year. I think that's a nice way to do it. But as for what they'll be doing or how far ahead or, you know, when this will take place, we don't know that for sure yet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how to be excited enough about this. Like, A, we get Amy Sherman-Palladino back, which anyone who watches the later seasons, you know, like, it wasn't perfect. You could feel her absence. And so I'm really, really excited that she wants to get back. Like, she's the driving force behind this, and that's the best part of it. So I'm so, so geeked. I want to see at least one giant town event. I mean, they're doing 4 seasons, so they could do 4, but I mean, if you know anything about Stars Hollow, they love their events, and they love, you know, setting things up in the town square. So yeah, I'm really excited. I can't wait.
Awesome. Really cool.
Moving on to movies, Ben Affleck has been chatting a bit about him as Batman and being the Batfleck of it all, and he's actually considering directing a solo movie. Anyone who has been following Ben Affleck's career, I don't know if everyone has, he has directed before. He's actually directed, I think, like four, maybe five movies now. Gone Baby Gone, The Town. He's had a really successful career. Argo won Best Picture, was directed by him. And he's a very, very well-known and well-respected director. He's got a talent for it. So I would love to see him tackle a Batman movie. Like, there hasn't been any official talk, and I guess his schedule is very complicated with upcoming movies, and he's not necessarily, I don't know if he's contracted for Justice League yet or if he's just committed to it, you know, but so there's that to work out schedule wise but I'd like to see him tackle it. I think he'd be good at it.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen him, as you said, you know, so we don't really know what to expect, but I mean,
exactly, yeah.
It's great to
there's
see
only
that he's...
so much you can say before you see him on
yeah.
screen.
Yes. Ghostbusters. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's we have to it's great that he's so enthusiastic about it, though. I do really like that. So next up, we're just moving down the list here from DC to Marvel. Perfect transition, always. Just a little news from right after we recorded last week's episode that Marvel apparently wants Peyton Reed back for the sequel to Ant-Man, which I'm going to call Ant the Wasp, because I feel like I'm sort of my quiet little rebellion here against that title. He obviously directed Ant-Man for Marvel. He stepped in to replace Edgar Wright, who dropped out after a grueling process. Edgar Wright had been working on Ant-Man since before the MCU even really launched, and he'd been developing it with Kevin Feige and everyone, and then at some point, according to sources, at some point, Feige began ordering script rewrites without Edgar Wright's involvement. He started, suddenly it stopped being Edgar Wright's Ant-Man and it started being Marvel's Ant-Man, and they wanted to tie it in, obviously, to all the other movies. So they brought in Peyton Reed to replace him, and it seems like they're super happy with what he did with Ant-Man, so they want him back for the sequel. Yay? Nay? Eh? What are we feeling?
I enjoyed Ant-Man. I mean, it's not my favorite of the Marvel movies, but I would be happy to see more of that world from the same director. So mm-hmm. I don't see why not.
It'll be interesting to see him take a movie from its inception. I guess, you know, the vision for how it all looks and stuff is already there, but still taking it from its first draft and through to completion.
Yeah, rather than stepping in and trying to fill the shoes of, you know, someone who has already begun the work.
Yeah.
He'll get to do it from start to finish. So, yeah.
And it'll be super interesting because, you know, like, your sentiment is what everyone's saying. Like, oh, he did such a good job with the first one. But we have to remember the first one was very heavily colored by what Edgar Wright did. You know, he did all the, like, early script drafts with his writing partner, and he designed a lot of the stuff and was very heavily involved until very close to start of production. So this time, they'll have to do a script without Edgar Wright, and they'll have to sort of, I don't know, it'll be really interesting to see where the magic sort of came from, just from that perspective, because yeah, I mean, it'll be fun. I'm happy to see Evangeline Lilly step up and have a bigger role, and
most
the Wasp.
Most definitely.
Yes. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Exciting news. He's not confirmed yet, but they are in negotiations, so we'll keep you posted. Now for the next story, which has me super excited.
Yes, we actually talked about the first Pride and Prejudice and Zombies trailer a couple of episodes back, and everybody seemed pretty excited for this. And obviously, I could see why Selena is excited for this film. So now
this is like made for me.
Exactly. I mean, she trains Buffy style. What more could you want? Anyway, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. But the second trailer for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is really great, especially if you haven't read the book or you need to know a little bit more about the backstory of what's going down. Because the first one just shows a lot of ass kicking, which is always nice, but not usually very good if you want to know a little bit more about the backstory. So this one opens with shots from the first zombie outbreak, and you kind of get a feel for how the zombies came to be in this world. And then you learn that it kind of started with the Black plague, and that's how the zombies rose. And Lizzie Bennet and her sisters have all been bred not to find husbands, but to be zombie killers. So that's pretty exciting. And Mr. Bennet has a really good line in the trailer. It says, "My daughters are trained for battle, not the kitchen," which is really cool if you're like gung-ho about girls being awesome, which most of us are. And this is just like, this movie just keeps getting better and better looking. I'm really excited for this to come out in February. And I'm going to let Selena talk a little bit about this because I'm sure she's like itching to say something.
Oh my God. I mean, I don't even know where to begin with this. I absolutely love Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. It's actually like, you think, people who haven't read it yet have no idea what they're missing. It's just a timeless, amazing, hilarious, awesome book. Take that and add zombies. You think that's dumb. It's not. It's amazing. It's just, I don't even know. I feel like it would have been so easy for this to be dumb and to be like a gimmick, kind of like that whole, like, taking itself too seriously, like the Hansel and Gretel film with Jeremy Renner, whatever that was called. But instead, they've almost gone that like warm bodies route where they're really badass and really cool and fully committing, but also being just the over the topness of it all just makes it work. We've only seen 2 trailers, so we don't actually know what the movie's going to be like, but I just absolutely love the sheer unadulterated girl power of it all. You know, she has these amazing quotes. She goes like, "I shall never relinquish my sword for a ring," and I'm like, yeah. It's just a fist pump movie. I don't know, I'm gonna like throw popcorn at the screen and be excited. So yeah, I mean, it's just such a cool idea too, to take the zombie apocalypse trope and set it in like ancient England. Mm-hmm.
Victorian era. Yeah, it's gonna just be really fun. I think it's gonna be a fun movie to see on the big screen, and it just, this, the idea of the book lends itself so well to cinema, so it's gonna be really fun. And by the way, if you are looking to put this on your calendar, it comes out on February 5th, 2016.
Exciting.
Speaking of kick-ass ladies, Bryce Dallas Howard will not be wearing heels in Jurassic World 2. Now, I know everyone is so concerned about her footwear.
Many opinions about this.
It cracked me up because my brother and I actually got in a giant fight over her heels in this movie. I'm not even kidding. It was a massive battle because I could not believe how upset he was that she was running around in heels through the entire movie when there were dinosaurs eating people. I'm like, do you not understand the ridiculousness of your, you know, fury over her heels? But anyway, it's become quite the ordeal in pop culture lately to talk about Bryce Dallas Howard and her heels in Jurassic World. But I really enjoyed in the article that was written up by Andrew, she was talking to Collider and she kind of told them how she discovered this knowledge. And she was actually texted by the director of Jurassic World, Colin Trevorrow, and he just texted her #NoHeels2018. So that's how she found out about the sequel. That's how she found out about all of it. So I just thought that was really, really fun. Like, it's become enough of a controversy that that's how she found out about the sequel.
I know.
So, you know.
Surprisingly, though, like, people are now very mad that she's not going to be wearing heels.
That's because nobody can decide what the hell they want. But I'm just going to put this out here right now. The people that are complaining about, you know, her wearing heels, it's just like, some women are more comfortable getting things done in heels. Like, some people need more arch support. And I'm just going to say that if you spend money on a good pair of heels, those heels can take you to the end of the world. Okay. Okay.
Literally. Why does it matter?
Also, not like she was wearing stripper heels. Like, I could understand that. Like, she was wearing, like, very sensible heels to be running around in. I'm just going to put that out there.
Well, and as she's addressed in the past, like, she was not expecting to go fight dinosaurs that day. She dressed the office. She dressed how she always dresses. So she happened to be wearing heels, and rather than tromp through the mud barefoot in, you know, the jungle running from them, she kept her heels on. So deal with it.
That's
in the next movie,
she had some class.
in the next movie, I'm assuming she will be prepared to run in the forest. So, yes, of course, she would put boots or shoes of some sort on. So that's, you know, it seems, you know, logical that she wouldn't be wearing heels in the next one. But, you know, they had to address it.
It's just because, like, what does the world come to where we just complain about footwear?
It says a lot about the state of what we think is important when we talk about a female character and we have to talk about her shoes. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah. My whole thing is just, like, I know that people are, like, upset. It's like, why does a girl have to wear, like, look nice to, like, kick ass? It's just, like, some girls like to look nice and kick ass. And, like, that's okay. That's part of being a feminist is that you get to choose.
Sure.
And if you want to wear gym clothes to work out and kick ass or do whatever, then that's cool, too. But yeah. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Just look at Buffy, guys.
Exactly. Yeah. Buffy always looked on point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have absolutely no way to transition from heels to zombies, but there you go. The Warm Bodies sequel, highly anticipated sequel. Everyone was blown away by how amazing not only the book was, but also the movie adaptation. The sequel is actually gonna, in old faithful tradition, gonna be split into two parts. The author of the first book, who is also writing the sequel, go figure, Isaac Marion, announced that the sequel is longer than he anticipated, and it kind of developed in a different way than he thought it was going to. So instead of having one book called The Living, he's gonna now have two books called The Burning World and The Living, which is then the, I guess, the final book of the series. Or maybe not, who knows. His quote was really funny. He said, sometimes the baby comes out twins.
That's weird.
Awesome. Yeah, and one of them is going to be wearing heels, and there you go. But, I mean, I'm excited because I really like the first book.
I haven't read the books. I saw the first movie and loved it. So it is on my to-read list that is, you know, 5,000 books.
But the movie
long.
Was really good, too. Like, it really was.
It was actually a really good adaptation.
Yeah.
Because I loved the book, and it's such a quick read, Kristen. You'll get through it like that as soon as you get to it. So I'm excited.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a reader's, like, dream problem, is that the author wrote too much, and so you get two books. Here you go.
Right.
Especially because it's such a original, because I was kind of comparing it to Pride and Prejudice and Zombies before, because it has that dry snark, which I love. And I think in terms of the movie adaptation, I mean, obviously that's not what we're talking about here, but it was, like, I think it's one of the few movie adaptations that I've seen that I've legitimately felt lived up to the book and added something extra. And, like, it doesn't happen a lot. I movie adaptations are hit and miss for me. So I'm really excited about this franchise. I'm really excited about, you know, getting to read more from this amazing, hilarious world. The next book, The Burning World, is going to come out on July 5th in next year. And the threequel, titled The Living, will arrive in 2017. And he also said, to anyone worried I'm pulling a Hollywood and trying to stretch a small story across several installments, nope.
Love it.
Yes.
So moving on to some TV news now, we finally have an official release date for the Sherlock special, which plants our John... And whoa, it's John Watson and Sherlock into the Victorian era where they belong. So, of course, if everybody who watches BBC's Sherlock knows that their twist on the age old tale is plomping these. That's a terrible word, plomping.
Plomping, though.
Plomping. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore, guys. It's late. Anyway, they just toss these guys into the present day. So this is kind of cool because we get to see them, like, kind of in Sherlock's natural habitat, as it were. So for those of you who are interested in that, the special, which is going to be called The Abominable Bride, is going to air Friday, January 1st. And the most exciting thing about this is that if you live in the UK and if you live in the US, it's not a big deal because we are all going to get it at the same time.
All of us. Nice. Oh, wait, happens. No.
Yes.
except for Denmark, who lose again.
We always lose.
Sorry, like, yeah, I'll get it at the same time in like 3 months later. So along with this really exciting news, we also got a short little new trailer that's got a couple of new scenes along with some of the older ones that we saw in the first trailer. And then there's also a bunch of stills that you can take a look at on Hypeable.com if you're interested in that. On top of that, Moffat also said that he was working on the sly on series 4 of Sherlock, which should excite fans of the show. And he's hoping to make headway on that in terms of filming sometime in 2016. So cross your fingers for that. But if all else fails, we do have the special to look forward to, and that's set to air at 9 p.m. in the UK and in the US. So
it's not complete without Sherlock news. Like, I love things. It's so few and far between that we get Sherlock news that it's very exciting when you do. So I know I was geeked to find out that
also
it was going
to
be.
I saw today, sorry to cut you off, but that there were some theaters were actually going to be showing this too, which is exciting.
I think it's going to be airing, like, they're going to do screenings in theaters a couple of days later. So if you wait to see it in theaters, you'll have to, like, put your spoiler blinders on. But, it's definitely cool, though. It'd be nice to sit in a room with a bunch of Sherlock fans and absorb it that way. Like, it's a different way to watch the show and watch the special. So
that'd be cool. Totally. I don't know if I would do this. Like, I know Game of Thrones does this, but I feel like I would do this maybe for Sherlock because it's so long and it does lend itself to the movie aspect of things. So maybe I'll check that out. And that's going to be out in January 5th, if anybody's interested. So check your local listings for movie theater times for that.
Cool.
For those that might be award show fans, we found out today that the 2016 Golden Globes will be hosted by Ricky Gervais, which I have to say, this news is a little bittersweet. Like, he hosted for 3 consecutive years before Tina and Amy took over, who I loved.
Yes.
Loved. I'm sure the entire world loved them. And he's a bit divisive. Some people love him. Some people hate him. It's, you know, it is how it is. I am not a Ricky Gervais lover. I think he did a fine job when he was on. But, you know, I would have loved to see somebody else new step in. Like, I'm a huge Andy Samberg fan, and I feel like he could have done a great job. So, you know, I would have loved to have seen some new blood. But if you're going to have somebody back, I think Ricky Gervais is definitely one that's going to create headlines.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Tina and Amy did such an amazing job that I don't really see why they're even doing Golden Globes anymore. Like, I feel like they should just end now.
Well, they went hostless for quite a while.
Yeah.
The recent years, starting with Gervais back in 2010, was the first time it had a host. Like, they had just moved from category to category and had announcers, like, you know, or not announcers, but like guest presenters come up, you know, actors and whatnot, present each category. So it's kind of a new thing for the Globes to have a host, and apparently they're going to try and keep it up. So we'll see.
Yeah. Cool. So moving swiftly along down the list, this news, we didn't forget you guys. I know that we actually had people telling us specifically to talk about this story. Finally, we have a Jessica Jones trailer, a real long, huge plot revealing trailer for the upcoming Netflix series. Jessica Jones obviously is a Marvel franchise. It stars Kristen Ritter as the titular Jessica Jones, and I've never said that word out loud. That was exciting. We've also got Mike Coulter, who will be playing Luke Cage. He's set to have his own spin-off series, actually, but he's going to be featured in Jessica Jones as well. We've got David Tennant as the villainous Kilgrave. We have got a bunch of other... Carrie-Anne Moss is in this from The Matrix. We've got a lot of really cool people. The trailer is actually really fantastic. Kind of sets it up kind of like a thriller kind of a thriller about Jessica Jones not only having her own powers but also kind of battling her dark side, who is Kilgrave, the sort of central villain. Mike Coulter's character is set up as her, like, liaison slash maybe love interest, and she is very afraid of Kilgrave, and it's all very dark and mysterious, and I'm knowing nothing about Jessica Jones at all, I am so excited for this.
Yeah, I know nothing about the Jessica Jones property, so I'm going into this blind, but again, I'm really excited about it. Netflix has a really good history, I mean, with Daredevil and some of the other things we've seen. I'm excited to see how they handle Jessica Jones in a like a female lead in a series like this. And I love Kristen Ritter. I've seen her in other stuff and she's great. So
Yeah, see, I've never really been a big fan of Kristen Ritter. Like, I think I saw her in one thing at one point, and it's, you know how like this one role and it really turns you off, like how I saw what's his face, the Firefly guy, Nathan Fillion. I saw him in Buffy before I saw him in anything else, and he's like a terrible, horrible villain, and like it's kind of like, for some reason, that's how I felt about her. But then I saw this trailer and now I think she's gonna be fantastic and I'm super into this. And I still haven't seen Daredevil, guys, so I have to catch up.
Yeah, you should do that. It's amazing.
Jessica Jones premieres on November 20th, so I guess I have a little bit of time left. Have you seen this, Pam?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know very much like about Jessica Jones, like you said, but I feel like Netflix just is on point with shows like this. If Daredevil is anything to go by, I think they're gonna treat Jessica Jones well, and I'm just excited to see what goes down when this comes out. But all of their original programming is really, really good, so I have high hopes for this, even though that's never like a smart thing, right, to go into it with extremely high hopes. But I think they're gonna do a really good job with this, and the fandom is really excited about it, so that kind of makes me excited to check it out. So looks like it's gonna be good.
Gonna be really good, I think. And just a couple more stories now?
Yep. We'll move from Jessica Jones that we're looking forward to a very sad goodbye, especially for me. It's a little, oh, maybe self-serving. I don't know. For fans that watched The Whispers this summer, it has officially been canceled by ABC. I know a lot of people saw it coming. Did you watch?
I did not.
Or are you just... Okay. I was just curious. It was not very well promoted by ABC. The fans that watched it seemed to have loved it, especially those that gave it time to build, because it really was a very, very different kind of show, with an invisible villain and, you know, kids being the target of this villain, and just they really utilized the creepy factor of how they set up this villain. It was an amazing series. It really, really did well with the fans that found it. I think ultimately what happened is most people hadn't even heard of it, and that was discovered especially by me when I posted that it was canceled. I had a lot of people say, I've never even heard of this. And it really disappointed me that they're not going to get a chance to see more of it. It starred Lily Rabe, who you might know from American Horror Story, and Milo Ventimiglia from Gilmore Girls and Heroes fame, and Barry Sloan, who was on Revenge. And there were a lot of really familiar faces and a lot of really great kid actors who put in some amazing performances. So if you find yourself, it's not available on Netflix or on ABC at the moment, but I'm sure coming up in the near months, we'll probably get the series in its entirety, which I believe was 13 episodes. And you should really give it a look, because it's a really great little sci-fi series, and it's just too bad that we won't get more.
It's such perfect timing, like, not that it's not sad, but that you're on the show, so you got to tell the story yourself.
I know. I'm kind of glad that I would love people to find it. It's, you know, it's a series that just got missed, kind of like Firefly had a very big cult following because people found it afterward. So I'm hoping that maybe this show will find its following.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Can only hope.
Yeah. How many episodes?
I think it was 13.
Intriguing.
I covered it over the summer. Yeah, it was supposed to originally air last spring, but they pushed it to summer, and I think that also did it in.
See, this is good, because this is like, for me, first of all, short season, not much time commitment, and shows that nobody else watches, usually what I like. So I want to check this out for sure. Yeah, it's my new favorite show already. So we just got one last news story. Hello.
That's right. I was going to say, you ruined my intro.
I'm sorry.
Well, we said goodbye to Whispers, but we're going to say hello to Adele. New single actually came out at the end of last week, which I know everybody's really excited about. The new single is, of course, called Hello, and it's everything you want in a power ballad from Adele, who was just
It's everything amazing. You were looking for.
We were looking. She said it was me. Anyway, enough with the Lionel Richie puns.
You can never have enough Lionel Richie puns.
I don't think so either, but clearly I'm in the minority, except for it's like you and me. That's it. Anyway, so along with the release of this new single, we also got a 6-minute music video, which was directed by Xavier Dolan. And it's really, really a nice music video. So if you haven't had a chance to look at it, I definitely recommend doing that. It's, of course, up on Hypebeable.com for your viewing pleasure. And it features Adele kind of hanging around in an old house, and she's kind of spring cleaning, as it were, as she talks about breaking up and running into a past lover over the course of a couple of years. So it's really, really nice. And then, of course, on top of that, we also got a full track listing for her upcoming album 25, which is out everywhere on November 20th. So this is going to be an 11-track album. And just looking at the titles here, some of them I'm like really excited to hear some of these, although titles, you know, you never really know too much about songs from the titles. But yeah, I mean, like it really sounds like from what she said that this is really her growing up album, because she said it was just kind of a way for her to get to know who she's become without realizing that she's grown up a lot. So her albums are always such a nice kind of look into her life and what she's learned over the course of the last couple of years. So I expect something really personal and really lovely from her when this finally drops.
Mm-hmm. Nice song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And who doesn't love Adele? I mean,
no.
You can never have enough. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this one too.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. And I don't know if either of you guys ever watched 90210, but the guy in the music video is Tristan Wilde. So it was in that. And I was like, oh my God, because I liked him a lot.
That just made it even better.
Yeah, the reboot one. Yeah. The original.
You said 90210, and I was thinking like Jason Priestley. Oh.
Luke, yeah. What's his face? Luke Perry, that was his name. Mm-hmm. Ah, mm-hmm. The good old days. No, the new crappy one, but Tristan Wiles was good. And the song is very, very good. And you can find a link to it on hypebeable.com. So, okay.
Goodbye news.
Let's say hello to some TV show of the weeks. That's wrong. TV shows of the week? TV? You guys know what I'm talking about. So this week, we've all watched shows, I assume. I don't know if, Pam, you've watched anything?
I'm currently catching up on The Walking Dead, so I think I'll just have to cover my ears.
All right. Okay. Well, let's start with the sad one, and we'll move into the happy one. So you take it away, Kristen.
Yeah, so anyone who watched The Walking Dead this week knows that there's quite the controversy on our hands. Pam, cover your ears.
Oh, no. Everyone, all the listeners, cover your ears. Seriously, it's a big spoiler. So if you don't want to hear anything about The Walking Dead, skip to the 54-minute, 40-second mark. That's 54:40. No spoilers after that, I promise. Spoiler
anyone
alert!
Who hasn't
I'm literally
watched
taking my headphones off.
Okay, I'll write to you when she's done.
I'll talk quick. My very, very, very favorite character. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't watched.
I'll put in a time code so they can skip it. It's fine.
Yeah, but Glenn may have met his fate. I love Glenn very, 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 very much. He has been my favorite for very many seasons, and I have been dreading this day. And so,
did you feel like it was going to happen?
Based on what has happened in the comic books, which we know the show does not follow the comic books, but based on what's happened there, people have wondered if it could be coming. And so, it's not expected, but it's still very, very much controversial. So we'll see what's going to happen. It was kind of left unfinished. We don't know for sure that what we thought we saw is what we saw. So there will definitely be more to come. Mm-hmm. But I hope it's not so.
You know,
There's a couple of really great articles on Hypebeable about it. So if you just go to the fandom section and find Walking Dead, you'll find all of them. Andrew wrote a really, really great rebuttal to what we may have seen that kind of shows that maybe there's a reason to have some hope. So,
you know,
but it
like,
was rough.
Yeah, obviously, first of all, character deaths, like they really hit you. They really hit you, and that really hurts. But I have to admit, like, I haven't watched the show since season 2, and I was upset. Like, when I saw it, I was like, they can't, of all people, like, what?
Yeah.
You sort of wonder, how is the show going to carry on? Because it's kind of like one of the hearts of the show, you know?
Well, and it's hard to pick a favorite character on a show like The Walking Dead because there are so many great ones.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are characters, especially ones that are around for a long time, that you become so attached to, especially in this world where people don't make it very far. Like, people die left and right on that show. So, you know, it's very tough. Very, very tough. But we'll see. There's reason to have hope. There's reason to accept defeat. Who knows? But, you know, we'll just kind of hang in there and see how the next couple episodes go and see what we'll find out.
Yeah. Because it's always like, they always want to kill characters to shake up the show. But sometimes you're kind of left thinking, well, if a character death actually makes the show worse, then, But, right. Yeah, we'll wait. We'll have to wait and see. I'm going to bring Pam back in here now.
I was going to say, somebody poke Pam.
Oh, yeah.
You can come back.
How do I do it? How do I write? What is happening? Oh, there you go. No. How to Skype. 101.
I just sent a message. She should be back. Okay. Poking Pam.
Very exciting.
Back.
Yay.
Are you back?
So,
okay.
You know how like that character... I just want to say one more thing. No, we're done. We're done with the spoilers. So I watched something super exciting. We can finally... super exciting. We can finally talk about this, obviously. I mean, I don't think it's much of a... of a surprise that we all watched this months and months and months ago, but it's finally on air, so we can talk about it. It is, of course, a bird, a plane. It's Supergirl! Yay! And it premiered, where we're recording this, very, very late Monday night / Tuesday morning. So it actually just premiered a couple of hours ago, and everyone has seen it now. We love it. I think all of us have seen it and loved it, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah? I mean, it's the pilot, obviously, there are some cliches and there are some sort of tropes that are being set up because this is a superhero show, and we are being set up for Kara, the main character, who is played by Melissa Benoist, to, you know, have weekly enemies that she's going to be fighting, and we've got her set up at her job with this secret identity, and the people that know who she is and the people she has to hide it from. But I think the tone of it is really exciting. The lead, Melissa Benoist, on social media has just been promoting this girl power aspect, and it's really like all about girls kicking ass and stuff, and I'm obviously a sucker for that, so I'm like, yes, I'll watch anything. The pilot is really fun. It's really good. I really hope that this is gonna take off. No pun intended.
Yeah. No, it's a really fun show. I was lucky enough to see it at SDCC, so I've been waiting months and months and months for everyone else to have their opportunity, and I'm so, so glad that now everybody can just talk about it and love it, because it really is. It's a lot of fun. They've taken a few liberties with a few of the things from Superman. The prophecies, like, they've used some things in a different way, and I'm excited to see them kind of turn things up a little bit. I was a big Smallville fan back in the day, so anything that gets you into the DC Superman world is really exciting. So
yes,
I'll be tuning in.
And we don't have ratings for it yet, but it's currently trending as number 9 on the worldwide trends. That's the word. And I think that's a pretty good sign.
Most definitely, yeah.
And if no one else has anything to say about TV, I think it's time we begin wrapping up the show slowly. We've got some articles that we want to plug from Hypeable.com in our Hot on Hypeable segment. Now, because we recorded this on Monday, Marima has not prepared any articles for us. So everyone hold hands and hope I can get through it without her help. On Hypeable this week, we have had so many amazing articles, and it's impossible to plug all of them, but I'm going to do my best to offer up a selection of stuff that you can go and read. I'm going to start with a couple of shipping posts, actually, because it's something that we maybe don't talk about on Hypeable as much as we should, but this week we actually had two very, very good posts that people have really been responding to. We had a Downton Abbey post about the Mary and Tom quote-unquote relationship. It's not a relationship, but it's kind of been... fans believe it's been brewing for a while, and we're in the last season, and people really want to see these two characters get together before the end. It was written by Ariana, and it's a really good read, and Mary and Tom shippers, of which there are a lot, have really been responding well to that. Brittany wrote a Once Upon a Time post about the piece of fan art that won this week's fan art contest on Twitter. It was this Star Wars mashup poster, like Swan Queen themed. Swan Queen is the pairing of Regina and Emma, which also isn't canon, but it has a very, very strong fan following. And it was amazing to see how much this was shared, because Brittany brilliantly, she didn't only write about the poster, she also wrote a little bit about how in fandom there's a lot of negativity, you know, the once upon a time fandom. I mean, you know this better than I do at this point, but they're very, it can get a little bit toxic between the different shippers, and they can get into these very, very serious, also the way that they treat some of the talent on the show, and they're sort of throwing accusations back and forth, and we've seen a little bit of about this because of people have been responding to this post. But I just thought that Brittany made some really, really good points about just toxicity in fandom generally, and how we should just all basically be nice to each other and celebrate this thing that we love no matter what we ship.
It's just one of those things, you don't have to agree. You can agree to disagree. You don't all have to think the same way. You don't all have to see the same relationships on your shows. But, you know, it's good to just respect each other. And you're right. She did a really great job of kind of addressing that, because it hasn't always been wine and roses for the Once Upon a Time fandom. So it was really nice to see an article like that kind of reflect all of that.
Yeah. Definitely. It was a really, really good read. It's definitely worth checking out. And on the topic of Once Upon a Time, we also have a great post explaining why Regina needs to be the savior of the show, which is a really good read, because obviously, you know, Emma has been sort of built up to be the savior, and now she's the dark one. So who's going to save them from Emma and from this new darkness? And looking at Regina's development over the course of the show, it might be really interesting to see her and Emma sort of completely switch places, and for Regina to actually take over the role of the savior. So we make a really good bid for that on Hypeable. And then I kind of talked about this earlier, but Andrew wrote a brilliant article about the availability of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, and how they could bring it to a wider audience, not just by making the play available, moving it to Broadway, which they're probably going to do, but also maybe screening it in cinemas or releasing like the play, traditional playbook that they're probably going to release. Then Katie did a quiz called, which is basically to find out where you would die on American Horror Story, which is super creepy, just in time for Halloween.
Yeah. I've never watched the show, but I took the quiz and I was genuinely freaked out.
So, okay, where would you die on American Horror Story?
In the asylum.
Oh, God.
Which was terrifying. The description itself was like, okay, maybe I don't ever want to watch American Horror Story. Uh-huh. I'm not a good horror fan.
No, me neither, actually. And speaking of not being a good horror fan, we actually have a brilliant article as well for Halloween of non-horror films that frightened us when we were younger, one of them being The Wizard of Oz.
I did one, and yeah. Yeah. Gully. Scarred me for life.
I was gonna say, was yours The Wizard of Oz? Because that's like my favorite movie of all time.
I don't know whose that was.
On repeat when I was 3 years old in my house. Like, my dad was like, nope, that's getting trashed. We watched it too many times.
For me, it was Beauty and the Beast. That terrified me to death. Like, I couldn't watch it for so many years. And it was actually the first DVD that I ever got when I was 13. And it was like a test of my bravery to sit down and watch it all the way through. So yeah, you can read and also people have been leaving some really good comments, because everyone has that movie that's supposedly fun but you think it's terrifying. We also have some really awesome interviews. We're doing a lot of interviews lately, guys. It's very, very exciting. Merrima interviewed the Lovely Little Losers cast. That's a web series. It's very popular. It has a big fan following, and that interview has been getting a lot of traction. Mikhail did an interview with Margaret Stoll, who wrote Beautiful Creatures, and she recently released Black Widow Forever Red. Very, very, very good in-depth interview. I said earlier, I released my suffragette interviews with Alexander Desplat and Sarah Gavron, and we have a interview with Juliet Landau of Buffy, and a new exciting currently embargoed project that's coming up on Tuesday, so around the same time as this podcast is released, and Joss Whedon is involved. It's not a Buffy thing, but this is actually fun. It was the first Buffy person that I've ever interviewed, so I was a tiny bit starstruck, I'm not gonna lie. And I also want to just plug again our Hype interview that we did on this podcast with Muzzled, Jason Charles Miller and Maxwell Glick. Muzzled, the musical, was just released on Monday, and we have a link to the first episode up on Hypeable. And me and Pam sat down with Jason and Maxwell and talked about the musical and talked about web series in general. And you can find that on Hypeable or on the iTunes feed.
And then we also had Mary-Kate Wiles on as a special guest host a couple episodes back, and she's on that as well. So we've had a bunch of them on.
Yeah. So, so definitely. So if you're a fan of that, all that stuff, please do check out our other shows that feature those people. So wrapping up the show now with just a couple of listener comments. We have a few from Hypeable.com. The first one from House of Black. Pam, do you want to take that one?
Sure. House of Black says, thanks for last week's iZombie recommendation, because you said it was like a zombie Veronica Mars. I gave it a try and I loved it. And you are right. It is totally V Mars with the voiceover narration and the wry loner kick-ass sensibility. And it's also sort of pushing daisies, maybe because we're in the morgue so often. Hypeable hosts rule.
Yay.
Well, thank you. That was so nice.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And Melissa? I'm like calling out like she's here. Melissa, hello. Read your own comment. Since
she's
not here,
that one
Kristen,
too?
Kristen, can you?
Oh, you want me to take it? Sure.
Yeah, please.
Sorry, guys. It's a little late, as
That's
we said
fine.
Before. Melissa says, hi, guys. I just wanted to make a TV comment. I was watching the series premiere of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and I was really impressed by the smart humor. It made me think the CW is absolutely hitting it out of the park right now with strong, non-conforming, non-stereotypical female leads. It's a network that just a short time ago was producing a lot of shows that felt like they were pandering to a teenage audience, rarely breaking out of a mold of casting unrealistically good-looking people with less than original conflicts. But recently, they've been churning out hit after hit, and I feel like reach a wider audience and contain more dramatic and comic depth. Between iZombie, Jane the Virgin, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, The 100,
Yay!
Rain, woohoo, and Beauty and the Beast, though I wouldn't call Rain and Beauty and the Beast quite as strong, I'm a little dumbfounded by how they've so impressively shaped their schedule. I feel like all of these shows demonstrate a very wide variety of types of women. They are projecting a much healthier and more empowering image for girls watching to look up to. I feel like somebody at the CW must have been like, wait a second, guys, we used to air Buffy. That show kicked ass and broke all the molds. Why aren't we doing that?
I love this comment.
I do too, because I totally agree. I was just having this conversation with someone the other day. The CW is really kicking ass lately and bringing some really great content. So I totally agree.
Absolutely. It's absolutely true. I mean, Melissa, you make a really good point. And I think that's why, like, whenever people sort of go, oh, that's a CW show, like, they are thinking of a very different CW than what is actually on the CW right now.
Give it a chance. It's all I want to say. It's like, yes. It's on the CW. Give it a chance.
I really want to check out Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I've heard good things.
Yeah. Have you seen the trailer for it? Because the trailer sold me, like, when it aired over the summer. It's just so funny. Oh, my gosh. And the ads are, like, all over the place over here in L.A., so.
Oh, I'll check it out. It's on my list right after The Whispers. And
there
Arrow,
you go.
Gone. All right, so moving on to Twitter now. Our first comment comes from Rebecca Caruthers, who says, thank you, Hype, for brightening my Monday with Gilmore Girls news. And sorry, guys, but I'm loyally hashtag Team Logan. Jess was a jerk. Uh-oh. Those are fighting words.
Just
good thing Merrima's not here.
I know.
Yeah.
To be fair, like, all of them were kind of jerks at one point or another. Like, they're all a little jerky.
I'm Team Dean, only because that's the only one I know who is. No, I'm not really Merrima. Please don't hate me. So the next comment from Nikki. Pam, do you want to get it?
Sure. Nikki says, not sure I can listen to this one because of the GG feelings are too intense at the moment. I'm pretty sure Nikki's talking about Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
We understand your feels, wizarding with your feels. Please listen and let's all feel things together.
Yeah, I told her. I said you guys are feeling the feels as well, so she really should listen. And
the feels have not ceased to
be felt.
And they won't.
They won't. They won't until this airs.
Yes. And final comment, Lady Ash.
Sure. Kristen? She says, have y'all watched At Muzzled Musical yet? I loved it. Oh, and did I tweet in why I am watching this fall? Project Runway and I just got into How to Get Away with Murder. So good.
Runway and I.
Yeah, I know, right? No, I just started covering How to Get Away with Murder this season, and it's really good so far. So, yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah, I need to catch up. I really like season one. Yeah, so thank you so much for those comments. And yes, we have watched Muzzled Musical. And we also, as I sent you the link, Lady Ash on Twitter, so you can listen to our interview. And you can, if you want to email us or tweet to us or Instagram to us, whatever you want to do, you can do, because we have so many ways that you can contact us. You can find us on Hypable at hypable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypablehype. That's hypablehype, all in one word. You can find us on Instagram at hypablehype, and you can email us at hype@hypable.com. That's hype@hypable.com. And I believe that is everything for this week. Next week, hopefully, we'll have a full panel. I say that every week. It's going to happen. It's going to happen, guys. One of these days. Thank you so much for joining us and for hopping on last minute, Kristen. And thank you, Pam, also for hopping on just randomly on a Monday.
As long as it works, you know.
We made it work. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I cannot wait for your clocks to go back so I don't have to get up at 5 in the morning.
Oh, time zones.
All right.
It happens a Sunday. So.
It does. It does. It's only one week of hell.
Next week we'll be all good.
Yes. It's amazing the other day, though, like the other time of the year, because then I can sleep in an extra hour. It's what I live for. Yes. Just that one hype recording. Yeah. All right. So let's wrap it up. My name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
And my name is Kristen.
Goodbye.
Bye.
I really just wanted to keep you guys up all night. That's why I keep talking. Like, how long can they stay awake? All right, it's future Selena again. Hello. So as I said earlier in the show, we're going to throw in a little clip here at the end from Juliet Landau talking about her new documentary, A Place Among the Undead. As I said before as well, I think this is a particularly good piece of the interview because she's talking about the conversations she's had with creators like Anne Rice and Joss Whedon about how they've used vampirism as metaphors for various aspects of real life. The full interview with Juliet is on Hypable, www.hypable.com/Buffy-Juliet-Landau-Vampire-Documentary-Interview. Got to get all the keywords in there. You can find Juliet Landau's Indiegogo page at indiegogo.com/projects/a-place-among-the-undead. Please go check it out and consider contributing and enjoy.
The thing that has been so exciting is when you talk to all of the creators of vampire content, I think one of the reasons that vampirism has stayed and has been such a phenomenon societally through the ages and has such an enduring force is because we can use the metaphor of vampirism for such a diverse range of ways to look at the human condition. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, with Joss Whedon, he talks about it's high school is a nightmare. He uses the metaphor of vampirism for high school is a nightmare, which most people can relate to. At least I certainly can relate to it. As Josh said, he never has a follow-up question to that when he says that. People can totally relate to that. With Anne Rice, she wrote Interview with the Vampire when her daughter had died. Mm. And her daughter had died of leukemia, so she created a child vampire who lives forever, and obviously leukemia is a blood disease, and she said the Interview with the Vampire is all about loss and grieving. With Kevin Grievous, he said that he created Underworld with his experiences about interracial dating, and so he created two species that don't get along, one of them being vampires. Joss said that Angel was his look at addiction. It, for us, it gives us such a prism, to a mirror, really, to reflect ourselves. And so what we've done is each of the narrative, the narrative is inspired by one of these metaphors and explores one of these metaphors that is reflected in the conversations.